Top Sport with Michael Abramson on SAFM.
Well, we can now talk cricket and look back on the series that was. Three matches that took place between the South African ladies and the Sri Lankan ladies. South Africa, of course, going 1-0 up after their win in Benoni last week, only for the Sri Lankans to come bouncing back with a wonderful chase in Potchefstroom, and then finishing off the business last night with another successful effort and a successful chase in East London. Joining us for the first time on the show, and it's great to have him, he's a cricket correspondent and indeed a sports expert and a man I've been trying to get onto the show for some time, but tonight we can put that right. Kevin Rademeier, good to have a chat to you and welcome to Top Sport.
Yes, good evening, Michael. What a privilege to speak to you, and I'm glad our schedules have been able to meet up for a change.
Indeed so. So we've had many, many chats, mainly about the soccer teams we support in commentary boxes at cricket venues. But we'll get onto that potentially a little bit later. Just want to ask you about your opinion on the women Proteas and the series that was. South Africa obviously taking a 1-0 lead on the back of what was not a great tour of Australia, but a record-breaking in some instances with that first ever one-day international win and T20 win in Australia, but bouncing back, wanting to make a statement and going 1-0 up and then letting it all slip.
Yeah, it was an interesting series. I think before I start that, I just want to give my condolences also to Luc Fleurs. It's disastrous what happened, and it's sad what's happening in our country. So condolences to him and his family. In terms of the cricket, well, I think whoever watched the cricket would see it was actually an extremely exciting series. And like you say, from a 1-0 comprehensive 79-run victory in the first match to two losses, which I think became quite a surprise, especially in this last one where Sri Lanka actually hit the highest target chasing. So it is a bit sad, and it also shows some big gaps, I think, within our ladies' team at this point, which is a bit scary with the World Cup coming up in a couple of months' time.
Yeah, absolutely. You make a really good point. Of course, there were extenuating circumstances, mitigating circumstances. Laura Wolfart, the captain, courageous, the reluctant captain, I suppose, at the start of her career, but she's now become a leader of great respect, didn't play in that second international, and South Africa seriously missed her, I suppose.
I think they missed her tremendously, and I see she was eventually the woman of the series or lady of the series with her 158 runs, and she was missed in that second match, and I think yesterday they missed Chloe in the decider as well. But at the end of the day, I think there's probably a bigger issue in the three players that we've lost recently as well. When you're losing three players of that nature like Mignon and that, you're going to suffer because you're taking a hell of a lot of experience out of the nucleus of the team. And I think it'll take a bit of time to at least get our bowling into a consistent state. I think the batting, we have some depth, but the bowling and especially our spinners, on these slow tracks, especially in the second and the third game, might be a problem looking forward to Bangladesh, because the pitch will be very similar in Bangladesh. And I think that is definitely one of the areas we need to improve in.
Yeah, absolutely. You make mention of the bowlers. Of course, no Shabnim Ismail, who's carried the attack together with Marizan Kapp for a long, long time. Her experience is certainly missed with the pace that she has. But you mentioned the spinners as well. I suppose what has been nice to see is some new young names coming through and at least being given a chance to show what they could do at international level.
Yes, and that's the only way to learn. It's easy for us to sit, us pundits, to sit on the side and discuss it, but it's the women in the arena that has to face it to get that experience. And like we've seen even with the Springboks, that takes time. You need to have the hard times before you have the victories in the World Cup. I guess we're just hoping we can recreate that form like the last World Cup where we reached the final, or at least to be able to adapt to the circumstances in Bangladesh. Because at this point, I mean, this is now the fifth series, three at home, and we haven't won one of those series. We've lost to Pakistan away on similar pitches, 3-0. We lost to Australia 2-1 away. And now we've lost to Sri Lanka at our home ground as well, 2-1. So I think it's a bit worrying. There are mitigating factors. And you can see in that first match, we scored over 190 with our full strength team. But I think, once, like I said, the consistency is key. And for any World Cup, consistency is the most important thing. And we have the talent, we have the cups, we have the Laura Wolfarts, but is there enough overall to take us through to the knockout and eventually a final?
Well, a chance to put all that right, as you say, with the One Day International Series starting next Tuesday in East London. Then, of course, they travel to Kimberley and Potch to end off that particular tour. So I suppose if South Africa could win there by 3-0, or even effectively 2-1 and win that series, it does round off the home summer effectively in some sort of positive vein.
Well, it gives confidence, I guess. Any kind of momentum, like they say, is key going into other series and going into the World Cup. But like I said, I mean, I think we'll have to use that to give more experience, to build our players and to try and get our bowling correct. We can't rely the whole time on Cup, who was excellent with the ball and the bat. We can't keep relying on Laura Wolfart. As much as we have improved over the couple of years with these world-class tournaments available for women, we've seen Sri Lanka, how they've improved. They beat England in September last year in England in a series for the first time. They've beaten us now in a series. And there's other countries who have fundamentally improved. And we might be playing catch-up, seeing that we lost some of our important players. It's a bit of a race against time. But we're South African, and we always have to try and beat the odds.
Yeah, resilience is key in our country, I suppose. One other player I want to mention who had a fantastic performance last night is Nadine de Klerk, and she's sure. The sort of player who she gives you everything. Looking at her performance last night, 44 not out and 25 balls with 4 fours, 3 sixes. She came in, she gave the innings impetus, then she took 2 wickets in 2 balls when the match was pretty much over, and took a really good catch as well. So a contributor in so many different aspects for the team.
She was spectacular. I was watching it. I think it was in the penultimate over where she took 28 or 29 runs off the over, 3 sixes in a row, all over cow corner. And that is actually what set up a decent total. They were looking at 130 at that point. She came in, she kept her cool, she kept her eyes on the ball, and that gave us what should have been above par target and above score. She was brilliant, and like you say, the match is pretty much over. The scores were equal, and she came with two wickets. But it's that fighting spirit that we need. It's that fighting spirit that will show the youngsters that you never give up until the end.
Absolutely. So let's move on and just chat briefly about the IPL. We don't get a chance to cover the IPL that much on the show because there's so many matches and it's just impossible to keep up to date with everything. But some of the South Africans making really good progress, as they always do, and turning in some good performances. None more so than youngster, our young fast bowling sensation, Mapaka, who of course took his first IPL wicket the other day, bouncing back after that horrible performance in that high scoring match. Just what do you make of the South African performances, and how important is the IPL for our cricket going forward?
Michael, the IPL, it's a 50-day carnival. I was there last year, and I don't think people understand the pressure that's been put onto the players when you have 30, 40, and sometimes even 80,000 crazy Indian fans, one-sided, who are baying for blood. We saw with the Mumbai Indians captain the other day, even he got booed. That is the passion from the crowds. Imagine now yourself as a 17-year-old, he's turning 18, I believe, this week, in the mix of that. The fact that he made it there and that he's playing and he's got exposure to Sachin Tendulkar, he's got exposure to Rohit, he's got exposure to... I think that alone is an incredible story. I'm hoping that he gets given more chances. I hope that Cricket South Africa treats him well and that we don't over-bowl him, and that we expose him in the right time. And it's so exciting to see a youngster like that from St. Vivians performing on the big stage and getting a wicket as well, which is brilliant. It'll help his confidence. Other people of note is Claassen, who's already scored 167 in the IPL. I think that's the third most runs in the IPL. De Kock is doing well with 139. I believe he's ninth there. And our bowlers, Nande Burger, brilliant. Seventh most wickets. On the big times, again, on the big stage, which is brilliant for a youngster like that and good for the country. And obviously, Rabada, eighth most wickets, performing day in and day out. And once again, these are the guys that we're going to look to for the World Cup in America and the Caribbean in 2 months, well, less than 2 months' time. So we really need some massive performances from them, and there's no better stage than in the IPL, I believe.
Kevin, you've done a remarkable thing. I thought I was the mentalist. You have managed to summarize the whole IPL in context and take all the succinct points for us in less than 2 minutes. So hearty congrats on that. That was brilliant. I'm sure our listeners really enjoyed that. You talk about the World Cup coming up. Of course, we've got at the moment the South African T20 domestic series taking place. It's a double round, which some people are saying is sheer folly, but we understand the logistics behind it to give our players enough practice ahead of that World Cup effectively. But to have a double round going into deep into April, what have you made of this particular tournament? And can you maybe just give us a brief rundown of how things stand at the moment?
I can do that. And I was quite, I attended the first one, the Titans versus the Dragons. And to my surprise, Centurion Supersport Park was pretty packed. And Supersport Park since then has been pretty packed as well for the rest of the games, which makes me happy because the SA20 has come and gone, that carnival has gone. But it looks like cricket is still alive in at least Cape Town, in Pretoria and Joburg, which is the players deserve it. Not everything should be on, should be made a carnival. What I am happy, what I can tell you is the leading run scorer, Ruben Herrmann, what a brilliant guy. I was lucky to know him before he played provincial cricket, salt of the earth, down to earth gentleman. What a brilliant person. He's had so many struggles in the last 5 years, but he's got an incredible average of 54. 327 runs, 100, a couple of 90s, doing brilliantly. And this is important, Michael. Let me tell you why. For the SA20, those players were signed on a two-year deal. That two-year deal is now finished. So all these youngsters, all these new guys will be playing not only to try and make the Proteas, but to get a lucrative SA20 deal, which can change their lives, it can change their families' lives, and once again, open them up to IPL contracts and different contracts. So he's doing brilliantly. Then we've got our regulars. Ryan Rickelton, 273 runs. Reeza Hendricks, 257 after his amazing innings yesterday. Once again, these are guys that could be representing us in USA and the Caribbean. Bowlers as well. Our spinners, they are coming into their own with Samatu and Fortein with the most wickets. And the Warriors are looking like definitely the favorites. They've won 8 out of 8. They take on the Titans tomorrow, my beloved Titans, who are struggling. And it looks like the Titans are in a race for that fourth place against the Dolphins and against the Dragons. So they need to pull something out of their hat tomorrow there in the Bay.
All right. Well, that's how things stand at the moment in the South African T20 domestic series. So lots going on there. Matches pretty much every day or every second day. So lots to follow for the cricket enthusiasts. Let me ask you while I've got you on the line, let's switch sports a little bit and just briefly talk football. I know you're a big Luton Town supporter. You told me before yesterday, before your game against Arsenal, that you thought Luton might get thrashed. In the end of the day, they did quite nicely. Going down 2-0 away at Arsenal is certainly not a disgrace at all, but a real battle between yourselves and Forest, with Nottingham Forest, of course, winning the other night at home to Fulham, which has given them a little bit of breathing space. But it would, a lot of people, the neutrals particularly, are saying it would be really lovely if Luton could survive the season. Just tell us about your interest in Luton, where that comes about, and what you feel your team's chances are for staying up this season.
Luton comes from 1988, a love for them, watching them in the FA Cup, watching them in the league, where they actually beat Arsenal as well. I was lucky enough to go and watch quite a lot of Luton games. They were an incredible club. They didn't know me, but they actually offered me a lift back to the airport just because I was a foreigner. It was snowing. I got to meet some of the management. Really brilliant. They, in the mid-90s, they lost 30 points. They were relegated from the first league. Eventually ended up in non-league 10 years ago. And it's a bit of a Cinderella story.
And by the way, sorry, just to interrupt, when you were in non-league, you beat my team, Norwich City, in an FA Cup match not too long ago as a non-league side. So I'll never forgive you for that.
One of the games I was lucky enough to watch at Kenilworth Road while they were in the first league actually was actually against Norwich, and that actually broke my heart because we were leading until the very, with 2 minutes to go, and then we gave two goals away. So that made me love them a bit more, being the underdog. but it's a Cinderella story because within 10 years they went from non-league, which is almost impossible to get at, because only one team gets out of the year. Well, two teams within the playoffs. They were able to win the playoffs last year from the championship on penalties. And this year, like you say, found themselves in the Premier League, where one player from all the other teams from Arsenal and that are worth more than a whole squad combined. So it's really a story of the underdog. It's a story of everyone playing for the community, everyone playing for the coach. However, yesterday I did message you. I said we're going to lose 8-0 because 12 of our first team players are out. We're such a small squad as it is, but 12 of our main players are out. Yesterday on our bench, we had four teenagers, one being 16 years of age, and two goalkeepers. So we really don't have any depth. However, I think Arsenal also took their foot off the pedal a little bit at halftime, if I'm honest.
All right, well, that's a lovely story. It's a feel-good story, Kevin. I mean, a few years ago, Norwich took on Manchester City at home and also had about 10 players out, and everybody thought we're going to lose 8-0, and we won 3-2, which was a real anomaly of a result. It's been great to chat to you. Thank you so, so much for your input on the show on many, many different sports. We look forward to inviting you back soon to chat more about the world of sport. Good luck for Luton. Hope they survive this season. I think it would be a real feel-good story if they are able to do so. And thanks again, Kevin. We'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks, Michael. Let's leave room for a miracle. Let's see. Thank you so much for having me.
Only a pleasure. Kevin Rademeyer, our cricket correspondent and sports correspondent, chatting to me on Top Sport.
It's tea time on Top Sport with Michael Abramson.
It's tea time indeed. That's T-E-E time. I'm not talking about the drink to give you the caffeine that you need to stay up. It's tea time as in the golf tea. And two tournaments taking place at the moment. The one is the Absa Ladies Invitational. I can tell you the first round of three rounds has completed today. Kira Floyd, the South African, is top of the pile on 5 under par. Followed by Cassandra Alexander on 4 under. Leanne Pace, who's been on our show before, is in third place on 2 under, together with Tara Gribeno and Stacey Bregman. Good to see Stacey Bregman doing so well. She's 2 under par as well, and the rest of the field further back. So that's what's happening in the women's tournament. In the meantime, as far as the men are concerned, the intense competitiveness of the Sunshine Tour shone through again today as the first round of the Limpopo Championship ended in a 4-way tie for the lead at the Euphoria Golf and Lifestyle Estate. Wilco Nienaber, Michael Hollick, Dean Hermeses, and Ethan Smith all opened with rounds of 6 under par 66 to share the lead in this Bushveld retreat. Here are the thoughts of Wilco Nienaber after round number one.
But yeah, today was really, really good. Very solid and felt pretty straightforward. The greens were pretty close. Making putts was a little tricky, but I managed well. Yeah, first day, just try and not play yourself out of it. Well, that's what I try to do. So, yeah, golf on the Sunshine Tour is very, very, very strong, very competitive, and I think they're really doing a good job with the tour.
So that is Wilco Nienaber talking after his round today, and that clip was courtesy of Flismas Media. Let me tell you about the quiz question again. Let me repeat it for you. And some of you are really having problems with this question. Let me see if somebody will come up with the correct answer. So Piwe Mahlangu was the first TX Galaxy player to score for the team this season. What was amazing about this goal? 0860002032 or 0614104107 or X me at Memory Mentalist. So I want to know what was amazing about the goal, not the goal itself, but something around that particular goal. I'm sure some of our listeners will find the answer. I've just got one interesting message coming in from Mayibuye, our regular listener, who says, "You bowled me a snorter with a quiz," but he also just wants to pass on his condolences to the family of Luke Fleurs, the Ubuntu Academy, Supersport United, and Kosi Nation player who died tragically last night in a terrible, terrible incident in a botched hijacking. Well, it wasn't botched, I suppose, in a way. They did drive off with his car and they killed a wonderful young life who had such a great future ahead of him. Really disappointing. It's happening more and more in our country, and the public need to stand up and be counted and make sure that something happens to the people who did this, that they spend their life behind bars because they don't deserve to be on the streets. So let me let you know about Banyana Banyana. Tomorrow they are, of course, playing against Nigeria away from home. That match at 5 o'clock South African time. And they will also be playing the return leg on Tuesday. As far as the return leg of that match is concerned, whoever wins over the two legs goes to Paris automatically. We are trying to get our respondent, Letabo Kganyago, just from Idiski Times, to chat to us about that game. We're trying to get her on the line. I'm just waiting for indication. We do have her on the line. So Letabo, good evening. Key next few days for Banyana Banyana and a chance to go and celebrate in Gay Paris, as they say, if they can win this match against Nigeria over two legs. Good evening to you. Welcome.
So thank you for having me. Especially I just want to send condolences to Luke Fleur's loved ones, said what has happened. And yes, only one can join to the Olympics, and it would be great.
Letabo, sorry, we're losing you. Your connection is not great. Can I ask you maybe just to move around slightly so we can hear you more clearly?
Okay. All right. Better now?
It's a little bit better. Okay, just carry on. And thank you again for your condolences to the Fleurs family. I think it's much appreciated. But just keep talking and I'll let you know how clearly you're coming through.
Yeah, so I'm saying only one of these two African giants can go to Paris. And it will be absolutely great if it's the African champions, Banyana Banyana.
Yeah, absolutely so. I mean, it's a strong team. Obviously, Desiree Ellis has done wonders with this team. They are, as you say, WAFCON champions, defending champions in that particular competition. It's the advantage, I suppose, of playing the second leg at home, which means if South Africa can get some sort of a result tomorrow, then they'll find it a little bit easier, I suppose, on home soil on Tuesday. But still, such a key match against the Super Eagles ladies, effectively, and Nigeria, a tough proposition to face.
Absolutely. I mean, like, if we check the record of how the qualifiers have gone, we have had the luck, so to say, of starting away and coming back home to finish it off. Perhaps that's a good omen that even in this last round we're starting away. But definitely nothing can be left to chance. And especially when you consider that in the Olympic qualifiers, the away goals don't work. They do not count. So nothing cannot be left to chance, either for South Africa or for Nigeria. Both of them, they've been haunted by having not been at the Olympics recently. For Banyana, it's 8 years. For the Super Eagles, it's 16 years. And this is the most decorated national women's team on the African continent. 9-time champions, you know, yes. And if you look at the history of them recently together, you can take it as far back as the Cameroon WAFCON, the semi-final meeting Nigeria beat South Africa, Ghana 2018, when we qualified for our first World Cup. We beat them in the opening round of the tournament, went on to lose to them, but on penalties in the final of the tournament. Then you look at the Aisha Buhari Cup, which also then you look at how, I think if I remember well, it came just after the COVID, the players had not been playing together for a long time. Maybe perhaps that's something we can draw strength from, that even now when you look at the girls that have just come back from long-term injuries like Ebamba Nanimbanis and Yorisile Janis, they can still just, you know, sync together like they know each other. The chemistry can work that well. Then you also look at the 2022 WAFCON, where we unseated them as African champions, that the history is there. There is the goal that they both want to bury to go to the Olympics. There's just so much at stake when Nigeria and South Africa meet.
Yeah, absolutely so. But such a key match for our country. I suppose participation in the Olympics is one of the ultimate aims for the team. 17 home-based players left our shores, a lot of foreign players, of course, joining in Nigeria. But looking at that team, you've got Jermaine Seoposenwe, you've got Khatlana to lead the attack. Matlow is always dependable in goal. Of course, it looks like Caelan Swart could well start tomorrow in goal. So a very, very strong team. Hilda Magaia or Magaia or however her name is pronounced. There's a lot of key players who did really well at the World Cup last year. So there's a lot of strength in the team. It's just a matter of, I suppose, going out with the belief that they can do it in Nigeria.
Absolutely. There's a lot of also there's a lot of experience in that team. But also what I love, what you touched on, Jermaine, who is scoring left, right and center, you know, in Mexico, Tendi and Hilda Magaia. Both, all three of them are front line playing in the same league now. I think that should bode well for us. They're all playing in the Mexican league. Both Jermaine is scoring, Hilda is scoring, and even Tendi scored the other day. They're playing against each other. I think that should both, you know, besides the experience as well of having played together for such a long time. But, you know, our front line is on fire when you look at it, the way you're explaining it. And also, Caelan should be very reliable. She has been reliable in the qualifiers when she had time. I think she'd had more time. Even the experience from the World Cup when people wanted to play her, you know, she proved, she raised her hand. So I do think, in my opinion, looking at the goalkeepers, she should be the one to start. And also, even in that Aisha Buhari Cup, she was the one in goals, you know. So I am expecting that Caelan will start, and the front line will front line like how we know it to front line, you know. So I'm quite confident in the squad that coach has put together.
And Letabo, I just want to ask you about some of the threats from a Nigerian point of view. They've got some key players. Of course, it's their home leg first. They're playing in front of their own fans. They also want to get to Paris. Who are the dangers in their team, effectively, and what do Banyana have to watch for tomorrow?
Well, if you look at the Nigeria squad, obviously, most of them now playing in the U.S., playing together, the girls that are playing in the U.S. should pose a threat. That includes Asisato Shwala, who is the current African woman player, you know, of the year. And Nigeria itself as a team being the African women's team of the year. You look at their goalkeeper, how she performed also in the World Cup as well, you know, that you can see that she's somebody to be reliable at. Their captain as well, Ajibade, I think one of the most fantastic players. She plays in Spain. She's also one to look out for.
So key match tomorrow, 5 o'clock. Of course, it kicks off in Nigeria. That's 5 o'clock South African time. And then the return leg next week. What sort of support are we expecting on Tuesday on South African soil for the team?
You know, Mike, I don't know if I was talking to you. I said it, that I don't understand why this team, the most reliable team we've had in national team-wise, the most competitive, one of the most successful, one of the teams that, you know, when they go on the field as a nation, we are almost assured that a result is going to come. We can never doubt their commitment when they step up to the pitch. That why do they have to beg for bumps on seats? You know, because also it will be disappointing if there aren't so many people in Pretoria next week, because you can see from the association's point, they have been trying since the dates were confirmed to, you know, sell the tickets have been on stage since then, since this fixture was confirmed, to say the tickets are online, I mean, like, are already available on stage. And also even on the social media, I saw they were making calls for social media influencers in terms of trying to get somebody who can speak to their supporters to say, come through, you know what I mean? So I hope to see a little bit more people come through. Like, this team shouldn't have to beg. This shouldn't have to be a conversation like that you and I are having, that will there be people there? Won't there be people there? And especially if you consider the magnitude of this game, what it means. And regardless of what the result will be tomorrow, the fact that there will be 120 minutes, I mean 90 minutes in Pretoria, they would still have a fighting chance should things not go their way tomorrow. But I'm hoping things will go their way. I'm just saying it's a magnitude game. I mean, South Africa, whether we're playing men or we're playing women, this is a big fixture. I honestly believe that Banyana shouldn't be begging. South Africa should be showing support. You know, they should be going there to watch these girls. They go out every day. They put their bodies on the line for this country.
Well, always great to chat to you, and your positivity just oozes through. Letabo Kganyago, thank you so, so much. Yediski Times football journalist, really great to chat to you on the show. I feel it in my bones that Banyana are going to be at the Paris Olympics. Let's hope that is the case. Enjoy the football tomorrow and look forward to a great result. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. And I'm putting my head on the block. Banyana will go to Paris.
And we can go to our final interview of the evening. Unfortunately, we don't have too much time, so we're going to have to keep it short and sweet. But we're joined on the line by the tournament director of the second edition, effectively, of the successful Kuzimpi soccer tournament, which is taking place on the 7th of April, the 7th of April being this coming Sunday. We're joined on the line by Mr. Shelembe, who is the tournament director. Sir, good evening. Thank you for your time tonight. Briefly, tell us about the event. How did it go last year, and what are you expecting this time around?
Greeting to everyone, all the listeners for FM. We had same what you call the same event, the Kuzimpi event in Anderson Sport Ground in Pinetown last year. It went well because there was a mayor, Mr. Kaunda, was there, and the police, Maranil police station, and the other stakeholders were involved. So we're doing the similar thing this year. We invited the Swatini artist and our artist here in KZN as well. We one of our sponsor, BP, and the other stakeholders will be have this same event, Kuzimpi Fight Against Crime, Anderson Park in Pinetown as well.
So just tell us about the participation, how many teams are going to be involved in it, and what sort of prize money are we looking at? How does the day work effectively?
By supporting by Sport, Art and Culture, they support us this event. We got some other medals. We got some trophies. We're expecting other ex-professional players to be part of us. We got, as I mentioned earlier on, that we got artists. We got police, Maranil police station. We got another Pinetown police as well. You can be part of it, and the community as well. They're going to support this event. And Santaco, we got Mr. Nkize, who's the head of the Santaco, Tepen West Region, Pinetown, got 20 association. They're going to be part of this event as well.
Sounds fantastic. Just tell me about last year's event. How did it go, and what was the feedback like after the event? Obviously, I would presume successful because you're hosting it again.
It was so amazing. As I've said earlier on, it was the first one. This we now is annual, is the second one. As I've said, mentioned earlier on, because I went to 2000 to sign the MOU with the Swatini. They're going to be our guests. We're expecting about 30 artists come from Swatini to come and join us here. Next year is going to grow more because we're expecting Zimbabwe, what you call Zimbabwe, and the other country as well, Maputo. They're going to join us as well. It will be very big next year. The whole South Africa, I think, will be part of this event because, as you know, the crime, the people want to invest in South Africa. They want to know what is happening. We're trying to be part of this event. Everybody must engage to this event because no one wants to come, because there's so many investors want to invest in this country. They want to know what we guys we doing in order to avoid the crime in South Africa.
And of course, with the story of Luke Fleurs dying tragically last night, crime is on everybody's mind. It's in the forefront of everything that happens. And I think this initiative is really fantastic. Sir, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. Unfortunately, we don't have too much time tonight, but we wish you every success with your event on Sunday and hope that the people turn up in big numbers to come and support and indeed to come and watch all the action. Thank you so much for chatting to us and best of luck. We wish you a good weather day.
Oh, thanks so much, SAFM, and the listeners. Thank you so much to get this opportunity to be part of this. Thanks so much.
Only a pleasure, sir. That's Mr. Shilembe, the tournament director of the second edition of the Kuzimpi Soccer Tournament, which takes place in Pinetown, as he says, this coming Sunday. Let me repeat my question then for you, and then I'll read some of the text messages and we'll play a few voice notes as well. The question was as follows. Piwe Mahlangu was the first TX Galaxy player to score for the team this season. What was amazing about this goal? I think I've got you completely stumped tonight. Let me just see some of the messages that have come in. So as I said, Mayibuya says, I bowled him a snorter with a quiz question. Listeners complain. They complain when the questions are too easy. They complain when the questions are too hard. I never know how you're going to do, because sometimes I said a question like last night with a goal difference. I sent you a question and I thought it would be very hard and everybody answered it correctly. So I never know how it's going to go. But looks like tonight I've got you a little bit fooled. I'll give you the answer in just a moment. By the way, lots of positive feedback coming in for Kevin Rademeyer. I think that's excellent news. First time we've had him on the show, and a lot of you really enjoyed his contribution. We will certainly invite him back and have him to chat to us about cricket matters. I know many of you enjoy our cricket correspondents. Ken Borland, also very, very popular on our show as well. But great feedback about Kevin. So thank you so, so much for all of that. Lucky in Pretoria East says, Michael, that goal was an equalizer for an own goal by himself. Interesting answer. Freddie in Palm Ridge says, I think Mahlangu scored the first goal and went on to double the lead. And then other messages also praising the show generally and praising Kevin's contribution. So thank you so much to the listeners for that. Let's play in the voice notes or two that we have, and then I'll give you the answer to the quiz.
Good evening. Let me try the sports quiz. I think it was Sipuwe Mahlangu's first away goal for TX Galaxy. Yeah. You're speaking to Ngololo.
All right. So let me give you the answer to the quiz question that seems to have stumped you tonight. I have mentioned it in commentary because whenever I've been commentating on TX Galaxy games, I found this quite astonishing. And I thought, let me throw this out as a quiz question today, because Galaxy, of course, did win 3-0 last night. And let's see how the listeners do with it. So I promise you tomorrow night's question will be easier. But the answer to the question was, he scored the goal in game number 7 that TX Galaxy played this season. Their first 6 games, they scored only 2 goals, and both those goals were own goals. Quite amazingly. So they scored an own goal, I think, in their first match, or their opponent scored an own goal to give them a goal, and their opponent scored an own goal in another game, but not a single TX Galaxy player scored any goals for the team until match number 7. In 4 of their first 6 matches, they didn't score. In the other 2, the opponent scored for them, so they got own goals. And their first player to actually score for the team was in match number 7, which is quite an astonishing statistic. So that was the answer to tonight's question. But those of you who tried it, thank you very, very much for trying. We really do appreciate the feedback from our listeners, and it does make the show very interactive.